Behind the Scenes, February 7th, 2005.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters.
This is Behind the Scenes, an inside look at what it takes to put together a podcast and make it work. Check it out.
Hey, this is Craig Patchett, and this is Behind the Scenes for the week of February 7th, 2005. I hope you've recovered from last week's double edition. We've got a nice, calm, relaxed single edition for you this week, but still packed with plenty of material. So let's jump right into an overview of what we're going to be talking about in this week's show. First of all, we're going to talk about what to look for in a web host or ISP for podcasting. We're going to talk about OPML, what it is, and whether or not it's something you need to worry about. And talk about Skype, specifically phones that you can connect to Skype and phones that you can connect Skype to. We're going to talk about using music in podcasts and the legality of doing so. Talk about a great new resource for podcasters. And we're also going to feature, and I should say last but certainly not least, an interview with Matthew Bischoff from Escape Radio. And before we do that, however, we've got a few things that I wanted to wrap up from last week's show. So let's start that out with an audio comment from Rick Wesowitz on our section from last week's edition on phone recording adapters.
Hey, Craig. Rick Wesowitz here with ICM Raw and the engineer behind WGBH Morning Stories. I just wanted to tell you also about a couple of other telephone adaptors. The That 2 from JK Audio. It's available from MarkerTech Video Supply, also from JK Audio directly. I've used that. That's excellent. And here at WGBH, they use Gettners, which are very, very expensive telephone hybrids. I don't think you need something that big for podcasting, but a JK Audio piece, I believe that 1 runs about $150, and the That 2 runs about $200. The That 2 gives you XLR outputs, which is very nice if you're using a mixer setup as I do and as we do here at GBH. I'm using a Mackie 1402 board, so it's nice to plug into that. So there's my ideas on telephone adapters.
Great. Thanks, Rick. Next is a demonstration of a set of stealth microphones. And actually a very cool set of stealth microphones from a company that I mentioned in last week's show. This is a pair of SP-TFB-2, a really lousy name for a great set of microphones, in-ear binaural microphones from soundprofessionals.com. And this is a set of mics that look like a pair of hearing aids, essentially, that you insert into your ears, or that rest in your ears, I should say. They're not actually physically in your ear canals. And then have wires that come up over the back of the tops of your ears, behind your ears, and then down behind the back of your shirt. You can get the wires in black or in an off-white color. And they are very stealthy. But the cool thing about them is because they're resting in your ear, they record what your ears would hear. And so the result goes beyond stereo and has a binaural effect, which can only be explained by listening to it. So if you don't have headphones on, you won't get the full effect of this demonstration. But if you do, then you're in for hopefully a treat. This is a test demonstration that I recorded down by the beach with my daughter, Rachel. And unfortunately, there was a wind blowing and I did not have the wind filters that are available for the mics, and that also, unfortunately, make them a lot less discreet. You look like you're wearing hearing aids with cotton balls stuffed into your ears. But in any case, you get a pretty good idea of what these mics are capable of. These are the high-sensitivity versions of these mics. So here's the sample.
Okay, now I've turned sideways, as you can probably tell, so that the ocean is on my left. If I put the microphones in properly... Rachel is jumping into the pit that somebody has built, and so am I.
Now let's go down.
Okay, are we going down? We're going to get sand in our shoes. All right, she doesn't care. are getting much closer to the ocean. The sun has already set. There's still some light in the sky. It does smell here. It smells like the ocean. We are standing right on the edge of the waves.
See, I could pretend to do a podcast at the beach and you'd be none the wiser. Anyways, I couldn't get the levels up to where I wanted to on that because of the wind blowing, and I didn't want to compress it too much, so in any case, you got the idea. By the way, those are $69 plus shipping from soundprofessionals.com, and that was recorded onto the iRiver IFP-795 in stereo, obviously, at 256 megabits per second, 44 kilohertz sampling rate. So that wraps up the last edition, and now we move on to the next edition. We had a couple of mail-in questions and one phone-in question, or two phone-in questions from one caller. The first of the mail-in questions was regarding web hosts, and actually it was in respect to a comment at the Daily Source Code. Robin Gingrich wrote, "The one thing that doesn't seem to get covered about podcasting is where to place your MP3 files. Web hosts and bandwidth seem to be the biggest problems to placing your files for download. Can you talk about this issue and what solutions we should look for when shopping for a host?" And those are two very good questions that I agree don't get covered. There are two basic things that you need to look at when you're shopping for a host. One is disk space, and the other is bandwidth. When you create podcasts, the problem that you have to deal with is the fact that your podcasts take up a reasonable amount of space. Typically, you're going to run anywhere between 500K, half a meg, to a meg per minute of podcast. Generally, you want to try it and aim between half a meg to three quarters of a meg. So let's say you're looking at doing a 20-minute podcast. In that case, you're looking at anywhere from 10 to 15 megabytes of space per podcast. So now you start doing your math. Let's err on the high side and assume that you're dealing with 15 megabytes per podcast. How many podcasts are you going to do? Are you going to do one every day? Are you going to do one every week? Assume that you're going to do four a month. So you're therefore looking at 60 megabytes of disk space that you'll require per month. And let's assume that you're going to make each of your podcasts available, and you're going to keep all of them on the server. So you're looking at 60 megabytes per month, or a total of 720 megabytes for the year. That's your first number that you're looking at. The second number is bandwidth. Each time a subscriber or each time somebody downloads your podcast, they are going to use up 15 megabytes of bandwidth. If you have 100 people download your podcast in a month, then they are going to use up 1,500 megabytes of bandwidth, or 1.5 gigabytes of bandwidth. That's for one show. If 100 people download each of your shows and you're doing four shows a month, then that means 4 times 15 is 60. 60 megabytes times 100 subscribers is 6,000 megabytes, or 6 gigabytes per month. So what you need to do is you need to kind of sit down and figure out the math based on how large your shows are going to be, how many shows per week that you're going to do, and how many subscribers you estimate you're going to have, to come up with a figure of how much bandwidth you're going to need. Then, with those figures in mind, how much disk space you're going to need and how much bandwidth you think you're going to need, you can go out and start shopping around for a web host. What you want to look for is you want to look for a web host who is going to be able to, first of all, meet your basic needs. Second of all, it's going to be able to do so for a reasonable price. And third of all, as your needs grow, is going to be able to grow with you without charging you an exorbitant fee. Some web hosts, once you exceed your monthly bandwidth, will charge you per gigabyte per month that you exceed your bandwidth. And you'll find that in that case, you're going to end up with a horrendous bandwidth bill on the first month that you become popular. Other hosts will essentially just bump you up to the next level of service. So, for example, if they have a $3.95 a month plan that gives you X amount of bandwidth, and the next level up is a $9.95 a month plan that gives you three times that bandwidth, then if you go over the $3.95 a month plan, they'll just automatically bump you up to the $9.95 a month plan. So those are also things that you need to take into consideration. If you look around at some of the forums for podcasters, and again, two of the most popular forums, discussion forums for podcasters, are at Podcast Alley and at groups.yahoo.com at the Podcasters Forum, then you can get an idea of what different people are using. There are also a couple of brand new hosts that are designed specifically for podcasters who charge you only based on disk storage space. You are not charged for bandwidth. That is obviously the ideal for podcasters. However, these are brand new companies, and while I have no reason to doubt the service that they offer, anytime you're dealing with a new ISP, there's an unknown factor in terms of, you know, what their long-term service is going to be like. So that's just something to take into consideration. So those are the basics for looking at ISPs. I'm not going to endorse a particular web host. I'm just going to put out the criteria that you need to use to choose one for yourself and encourage you to go out and ask around and find out what other people are using and are happy with. I will tell you, however, that you should not be paying more than $10 per month to get started. And there are plans that are significantly less than that in the 4, 7, and 10 range. So if you're looking at a plan that's going to run you more than $10 a month, keep looking. Our second question comes from Christian Stout, who sent an email saying, "Hi there, enjoy your podcast and was wondering if you could talk about OPML and teach us about it and why podcasts need it, etc." OPML is something that I'm sure if you've been around the different websites, you've probably at least run into as an acronym, and it stands for Outline Processor Markup Language. And essentially, it's another form of XML, just like RSS is, that is used to encode an outline in a standardized format that can then be read by different programs. And as far as podcasting is concerned, OPML is being used primarily as a way of representing show notes. And you'll see this at a couple of different sites, probably the most notable of which is the Daily Source Code. Adam Curry keeps his show notes in OPML format and also has them in an HTML rendered version. And there's a big discussion going on at the moment as to whether or not OPML can be used to integrate show notes with an MP3 file in such a way so that information about the podcast can be displayed on your MP3 player screen while you're listening to it. Do you need OPML? No. No, you don't. If you're doing show notes, do you need OPML? Again, no, you don't. If you want to participate in the sharing of show notes and in the standardization of show notes, then it's something that you should look into, because at the moment it looks like OPML is going to be what's used as a standard across the podcasting community. So if that's something that you want to participate in, then OPML is something that you're going to need to learn. It's not difficult to learn. It's just like RSS. It's a way of representing data in a structured format. And if you link to an OPML file and do a view source on it in your browser, you can see what the format looks like, and you'll see that it's really not difficult to learn. So that's sort of a 10,000-foot view of what OPML is. If you'd like more information on it, there'll be links available at the Behind the Scenes website at bts.godcast.org. So that's it for our email questions. We also have one voicemail message, and let's go to that.
Hey, Craig, this is Charlie Eastman calling from outside Boston, Massachusetts. Thank you so much for Behind the Scenes. It's really, really helpful. For those of us that want to get going in this, it's just awesome. I have a question for you, And that question is, when you are dealing with Skype, and have you dealt with Skype, and how? What are the phones out there that can use it? I keep looking for resources, and I can't find anything to do with which phones you can actually use. I don't know if that's something you'd be interested in covering on the show or not.
Yeah. Hey, Charlie, thanks for your comments on the show, first of all. I'm going to take the Skype question in as two parts. One, as far as phone on the user side, and the other as far as phone on the receiver side. As far as on the user side, there are handsets that you can buy that you can use with Skype. I have no experience with them, and so I'm going to ask any of you out there who do have experience to contact me and let me know what you've used. I do know that Simons, however you pronounce their name, has a GigaDial line of handsets that can be used with Skype. They have a USB adapter that plugs into the USB port on your computer and then essentially acts as a wireless link to the handset and allows you to use the handset to talk through Skype. So that's one solution on the caller side. On the other side, you can use Skype to call any phone in the world, essentially, and that's one of the advantages of Skype. You do not have to be talking to somebody on the other end who has Skype running on their computer. And to do so, you simply purchase Skype Out credits, and they run 10 euros for roughly the equivalent of 10 hours of talk time. And at the moment, that's about $13, $14 US. So essentially about 2 cents a minute for a calling time. The only downside to Skype Out is that the way the purchasing works for the credits, it can be a little tricky if you're using a U.S. credit card. Some credit cards work, some don't, and some users have reported problems. I cannot get my MasterCard to work properly, and some people have reported that they have had to set up a virtual credit card through PayPal in order to get it to work properly. So it's something that you have to play around with. But once you get Skype Out credits into your Skype account, then you can use those credits to call any phone in the world. Now, the only downside to Skype, if you're trying to use it as a replacement for your phone service, is that you cannot have, at least not at the moment, you cannot have somebody call you on Skype. So incoming calls are not available as part of Skype. So hopefully that answers that part of your question.
The other question I have is about audio, and this is my burning question. As somebody that really believes in doing right by people who are creative, how are we allowed to use music in podcasts? Do you write to artists and ask to use it? Is it best to write your own music if you can? Can you register with publishers and things like that? I'm putting a podcast together. I really have a lot of music that I want to use, but it's obviously, you know, somebody made it, and I don't know if they'd give it away for free, even though I'm doing it for free. So any comments on licensing and audio would be more than welcome if you know about that stuff. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Okay, well, that is definitely the $64,000 podcasting question. And I'm going to preface my response by saying that I am not a lawyer, nor have I ever played one on TV. And so the answer that I'm going to give you is definitely something that needs to be taken with a grain of salt and followed up on. The definitive answer is that you need to get permission on anything that you're going to use in your show. The question is, how do you go about getting permission? If you're dealing with an unsigned artist, in other words, an artist that hasn't been signed to a label, where the artist owns their music and the rights to their music, and then that's the easiest case. In that case, you can simply approach the artist either by email, phone contact, however you can get a hold of them, and request their permission and let them know how you're going to use the song. And in most cases, you simply need to say, you know, I'm doing this podcast and I'd like to use your song in this capacity. Is that okay with you? And get their written permission or get it in an email and you're all set. The problem arises when you have an artist that is signed. or who has their music's rights being administered by an organization such as BMI, ASCAP, SACAC, SOCAN in Canada, I believe, or a similar organization. In this case, these groups want money if you use the artist's music, and it's up to you to pay the appropriate fees. Now, the problem is that at this point in time, podcasting kind of falls into a gray area in terms of what kind of fees need to be paid. Brian over at Coverville has secured BMI and ASCAP licenses for the songs that he plays on Coverville. But if I recall correctly, there's a conversation or a forum post that he had where, you know, it's sort of, he kind of suspects that the people he spoke with at BMI and ASCAP weren't even really sure what he was doing. So somewhere down the line, things are going to get straightened out and, you know, there's going to be a strict policy set in terms of how podcasting is to be licensed. But right now, BMI and ASCAP are treating it under their standard license, which means that if you want to play even one song that is administered through a BMI or ASCAP license, you have to buy their minimum package or minimum licensing deal, which is around $250 or $300 US per year, I believe. And that means that for each year that you have your podcast with that song available for download, you have to pay that fee. So for example, if I create a podcast that has a song in it today, then I have to pay a $288 fee to BMI, for example. If that podcast is still available next year, then I have to repay that fee. Otherwise, I have to remove the podcast off the server. And it doesn't matter if that's the only song that I use for the course of the entire year. It doesn't matter if only one person downloads that podcast. I still have to pay that fee. So it really doesn't make a lot of sense unless you're doing a show like Coverville, where it's an all-music show and you're creating a lot of shows. And of course, you have to do some paperwork, the reports, which songs you're playing, and so forth. So in terms of doing full songs, that's the deal. Now, in the middle, there falls another gray area, and that is, what if you're using song clips? What if you're doing a music trivia podcast, for example? And there's an area of copyright law that is known far and wide as fair use. And the only thing I can say about fair use is that it's not particularly fair, and chances are you're not going to get to use it. Fair use is very restrictive in what it covers. And the best way to determine whether or not it covers what you're doing is to read it. And I'll provide a link to it in the show notes at bts.godcast.org. But I would say 95% of what podcasters are going to do with music, chances are that it's not going to fall under fair use, and maybe even higher than that. So your best bet is to get permission from the copyright owner. That is the only way you're going to be sure that what you're doing is legal. And that either means going to the artist if they own the copyright, or going to the administrator of the copyright, which is going to be an organization such as BMI, ASCAP, SACAC, or whatever it may be. And again, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not an expert on copyright law. And just to cover your butt, make sure that you talk to one before you move forward with something like this in your podcast. So that's it for licensing. I hope that wasn't too vague. And I do encourage anybody who is an expert on this to chime in. Certainly there's been a lot of discussion on it on the forums, and I have yet to see a definitive answer on it other than make sure you have permission. And that wraps up everything except for what I'm hoping will be the highlight of this edition, a one-on-one interview with Matthew Bischoff from Escape Radio. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with Matthew, Matthew is a pioneer in podcasting. His show dates all the way back to, I believe it was September of last year, and he will tell you in this interview. And Matthew was also distinguished by being the first teenage podcaster. He has a great show. If you haven't heard it, listen to it. He will shame you in his knowledge of technology. And I have come away from his show with some great URLs and tips that I've used myself, and am definitely not ashamed to plug his show and recommend it to you. And before we get started with the interview, I decided against using Skype for these interviews since I realized that both sides of the interview had much better equipment than the quality Skype offered. And so to do this interview, we did a regular phone call, and both of us recorded our side of the phone call using our podcasting equipment. Matthew then sent me an MP3 of his recording, and I dropped that MP3 into GarageBand, lined it up with my recording, and then mixed the two together. So what you're getting in this interview is a mix of those two. And I, in my 10 a.m. Sunday morning interview brilliance, completely bypassed all my settings on my external DBX box. And therefore, you're going to get a little bit of distortion on my side of the interview in a couple of places. Otherwise, it came out pretty good, especially for a first-time try. So without further ado, here is my interview with Matthew Bischoff from Escape Radio. This is Craig Patchett, and I'm talking with Matthew Bischoff from Escape Radio for Behind the Scenes. And Matthew, let's just jump right into the questions. How did you get started in podcasting?
I actually got started via the first Slashdot article about iPodder. I think I had seen it somewhere before that, but I went to the iPodder website, and the first thing I listened to was Dave Slusher's Evil Genius Chronicles, and it just kind of made me want to do it. So 3 days after that, on September 27th, I believe it was, I actually started my own podcast.
Now, at that point in time, had you had any experience or background in either blogging or doing any kind of recorded shows?
Yeah, actually, I've had a blog since February, and I originally had it hosted on weblogs.us, which is a free movable type host. But after I decided I wanted to do a podcast, I got a server, I got a hosting account, and I had some experience in audio. I ran a shoutcast station for a few weeks.
So with a few weeks of experience, you jumped straight into podcasting?
Right.
Okay, great. That's excellent. What was your initial setup as far as equipment at that time?
I had an $8 Radio Shack USB microphone, Audacity, and that's it.
Now, you just recently upgraded your mic to a more expensive Radio Shack mic, is that correct?
Yeah, and I actually have an XLR mic sitting here until I get a mixer.
Okay, and was the original USB mic, that's been what you've used up until just recently?
Yep.
Great. In the initial days, what stumbling blocks did you encounter as far as getting set up and just figuring out how to get everything going? What were the things that kind of made it difficult?
Well, I've always kind of had an issue of the format of my show notes as well as ID3 tagging. I was trying to stay with the conventions on that. The only other thing was I wasn't getting the gain that I wanted, so I turned on the Windows gain boost, which worked pretty well. And, you know, I just had to kind of learn Audacity, enveloping, and stuff like that.
So it was mostly software issues?
Yeah, hardware wasn't too bad. I mean, the microphone worked. It wasn't great, but at least it worked.
Right. What about as far as just getting set up with the RSS feeds and figuring out the aspects of getting the podcasting side of it done?
Well, I had been following RSS for a long time before this, so that wasn't even an issue at all. I immediately installed the Movable Type plugin, which was no problem. I'm now using WordPress, and I'm on one of the latest betas of it, which has enclosures built in for MP3s and images. So, you know, the RSS, once you get over that original hump, is pretty easy.
Okay. What is it about WordPress that you like?
First of all, it's open source, and, you know, I really love the Kubrick theme as well as the PHP generation, and movable type has just become, I could never get the PHP dynamic pages to work. I tried so many different things, and the templates just weren't working out, so I just decided to switch. I still have the movable type installation there in case my posts ever go awry or something like that.
Now, let me ask you a question, because I use Radio Userland with Godcast, and just had a problem where Radio Userland crashed, and Radio Userland actually runs on your local machine, not the server.
Exactly.
So if it crashes, your site is fine, you just can't update it. If WordPress crashes, is your site still intact, or does WordPress render on the fly?
WordPress is actually, it stores everything in a database, so you should be fine in that respect. I mean, the only time I had a crash was when I put in a wrong field when I was playing around in the settings, so I could correct it. It's never going to lock you out, so it's uncorrectable.
But do your pages exist on the server as HTML files, or are they rendered when you request?
They're all rendered just from the database.
Okay. So over time, you're basically, other than switching from movable type to WordPress and switching your mics, you've pretty much kept your setup the same?
Yep.
Okay. Now, I know that you've just recently purchased a Mac. Why the switch in that respect?
Actually, I got a Mac as well as a nice Belkin KVM, so I haven't actually fully switched. Right now I'm on the Windows machine recording because the way I have the Mac set up, the volume is really, really low on the mic, and that's because of the microphone as well as that iMic. It just degrades the volume insanely. So I didn't really switch, but I'm using the Mac a lot more for usability as well as, you know, I just think it's not inherently more secure, but it's more secure because, you know, it's only 3%.
Right. Well, that's a good enough reason in and of itself. From your perspective and your experiences with podcasting, what advice would you like to pass along to other podcasters listening in terms of the things that you've learned in your experiences that would be most useful that you wish that you had known when you were coming along through the experience yourself?
Well, first of all, I'd say to buy a good mic in the first place if you think you're at all serious about it, because why waste the money, you know, on buying a whole, you know, upgrading your mics constantly? And then I would say to pick a good software package that supports enclosures, or I wouldn't want people to write the RSS feeds in Notepad. I really, you know, I want to see valid RSS feeds, and that's still not huge. I mean, a lot of the feeds that I look at, I validate a lot of feeds, and they're just not, they're not RSS2. So, you know, Radio User Land, WordPress, Movable Type with the plugin, they're all great ways to go, as well as the Durcaster script if anyone's just looking to podcast a whole directory of MP3s. I'd also kind of urge people to look for creative uses, because we're seeing like 1,000 different, or how many, I don't know how many podcasts we're even up to now, probably 1,500, something like that. And I haven't seen a whole bunch of things that aren't already available in another form. So, you know, there's so much you can do with audio, and not only just audio, but audio, video, you can podcast images, and so to try and be creative and not really look at, you know, Godcast or Escape Radio and say, I want to do something exactly like that, because I've seen a lot of that too. I've seen a lot of Adam Curry duplicates, and I think you should do something different.
That's good advice. Being the youngest male podcaster out there at the moment, I think my daughter has taken the title of the youngest female podcaster.
Yes, the first teenage podcaster,
right.
You can call me.
Okay, there we go. The first, that, I like that better. The first teenage podcaster. Have you found that that's given you an advantage in terms of bringing exposure to you, or has it been more of a disadvantage in terms of your age?
You know, I think some people are really excited by it, and some people are like, you know, that can't sound good. It's some 14-year-old in his room, you know, with a Radio Shack mic. But the thing is, you know, I've spent more of my life probably with technology than some of the people who are listening. You know, I've been so ingrained into it that I have a lot of knowledge, and I think I could share that, as well as, you know, there's a lot of other people who contribute to my show, who send me feedback and stuff, and I really appreciate that.
Well, I know that I'm 43, and I've been in this industry since I was 16.
Right.
And, you know, I've come away from your shows with a lot of tips and a lot of leads and a lot of URLs that have gotten into my favorites. So certainly I'm a subscriber, and you know, I would recommend your show to people without any hesitation.
Thanks.
Sure. What's been the best part of your podcasting experience so far?
You know, that's a tough question. I would say when I first sent that first audio feedback to Dave Slusher, and I just heard it played the next day, and there was this whole kind of forum of discussion about podcasting on Windows, and that kind of really inspired me to do it, because people really cared. People really wanted to hear it.
Do you receive a lot of feedback from your listeners?
I do, yeah. I get a lot of email. Not too many MP3s anymore. I think MP3 feedback definitely needs to come up. I mean, I'm not seeing, as well as on other shows, I don't see as much of it. And I think, hopefully, computer companies and companies will start bundling microphones. on my first computer that I had, it was a family computer, a Toshiba, there was a mic built into the monitor. Computers all used to have microphones, and that kind of dropped off for a while. I hope I see that trend go up again.
Yeah, I spent about 5 minutes the other day trying to Skype somebody on my laptop before I realized that there wasn't a built-in mic.
Right.
So it's kind of embarrassing. Have you tried or have you done any work at all in trying to track how many people are subscribing?
Yeah, I did. I forget how long ago it was, but I switched all my feeds over to FeedBurner.
You did? Okay.
Yeah, and I'm finding that fairly helpful. It, you know, it doesn't work for the direct MP3 downloads, but for at least for the people who are subscribing, I've looked at the kind of technologies they're using to figure that stuff out, and it seems pretty solid.
Are you concerned at all that dealing with a third party, and especially one that's relatively new, and in fact is still in beta, you know, in the long run may end up possibly causing problems if they end up having problems of their own?
Actually, I've been on FeedBurner since it was alpha. I used it for my other weblog, you know, like probably days after it was released, and I found them to be really nice guys, and they added the SmartCast feature as soon as they figured out podcasting was going to be huge. So I think they're really dedicated to the community, and, you know, if they start charging, you know, $5 a month, I'll gladly pay for it for their tracking abilities.
Okay. Was there anything else that you wanted to add, any other advice that you wanted to give either people who are doing podcasts already or people who are thinking about doing podcasts beyond what you already said?
The only other thing I would say is definitely for exposure to submit yourself to as many directories as possible. And I'm kind of upset that the DMOZ, at least the last time I checked, does not have a podcasting directory yet, which is it should be there.
That who?
The DMOZ, the Open Directory Project.
Oh, okay. Now, actually, that raises an interesting question, and I just mentioned this in my last podcast, my last Behind the Scenes, is that I found that 95% of my directory traffic is coming from iPodder X.
Yeah, they've got a really nice directory over there.
Right. iPodder X, iPodder, audioweblogs.com, and those three alone, and now since I've been in the top 50, Podcast Alley, but just those four are probably 95% of the traffic that's coming in from directories, with all the rest combined only accounting for about 5%.
Yeah, Podcast Central, what are some of the other ones? I mean, they're just kind of non-updated, kind of just hanging on there.
So you've seen similar figures?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Okay, well, great. Well, Matthew, I really appreciate your time and certainly appreciate your podcast.
No problem. It's at escpodcast.com.
Absolutely. escpodcast.com. That's Matthew Bischoff and Escape Radio. And definitely check it out if you're not already subscribed.
Thanks, Craig.
Thank you. And I would definitely like to thank Matthew Bischoff for taking the time to participate in this interview. And that not only wraps up the interview, but also wraps up this week's edition of Behind the Scenes as we creep up once again on 40 minutes, despite my promise to keep this one to 20. As we finish things up, I'd just like to remind you that this is intended to be a community show. And in order for it to be a community show, I need your contribution. So please submit any questions, comments, feedback, audio comments, anything that you think would be useful to the show to feedback@godcast.org. You can also leave voicemail at our comment line at 815-301-8600. Unless you're in the greater Chicago area, that is a toll call, and voicemail messages are limited to 2 minutes. And finally, visit the website for links related to this week's show or to catch up on previous shows. The website is at BTS, B as in boy, T as in Tom, S as in Sam, .godcast.org, GODCAST.ORG. And while you're there, please vote for Behind the Scenes at Podcast Alley. You'll find a handy voting form on the Behind the Scenes homepage. And that finally does it for this edition. This is Craig Patchett. Thanks a lot for listening. Have a great week, and God bless.